Now to Liberia, where in 1999, William Powers traveled to the West African nation to take over as director of projects for Catholic Relief Services. Powers was fresh out of graduate school and filled with idealism and a healthy dose of fear. 7 years of a bloody civil war had ripped Liberia apart, and the next 7 years of so-called peace under then-President Charles Taylor weren't much better. Still, Powers believed in his mission to fight poverty and save Liberia's rainforest. He spent 2 years there trying to teach Liberians to live sustainably, but it was the lessons he learned about what he calls the fourth world that endure. William Powers has chronicled his experience in Liberia in a new book, Blue Clay People, Seasons on Africa's Fragile Edge. Mr. Powers, how's the body?
Body fino.
You really have a voice in this book that really captures the sounds of the people from Liberia.
That's right. The Liberian English is actually a mixture of African dialects and, you know, English from the American South.
That's because Liberia was formed from American freed slaves.
It's America and Africa. It's our quasi-colony, the only one we actually set up in Africa. And you hear in the, for example, around Christmas time, people will say compliments of the season, which comes, I think, right out of the 1800s in the States. And, you know, the country was set up by former American slaves as a way of going back to Africa. So there's a good sense of it being sort of a part of ourselves.
You write very passionately at the beginning of the book about your first impressions. And I wonder if you could share those with us.
Well, one of the first impressions was just driving from the airport into Monrovia. You're going along this road where all the telephone poles have been decapitated and the wires are hanging out like spaghetti, just coming out of the poles. And then you end up in the downtown area of this capital city, which is just a bombed out area, you know, buildings that are just falling to the ground and marked with mortar shells. And yet against this background of total human devastation is the most brilliant ocean, palm trees everywhere, a lush kind of jungle that's right there coming out of every possible crack in the city. And then, of course, arriving at my house at Carolina Farms, where I went through the gates and it was just this beautiful compound of villas, like Italian villas on this river that empties into the Atlantic, and people with pet chimpanzees and a kind of bizarre new colonial world that I never had even dreamed of when I signed up to work with CRS in Africa.
It's kind of ironic that here you've got this country that, you know, was of freed American slaves, and yet you're returning back to basically a plantation system.
Well, that's the interesting thing. I mean, historically, the former slaves that went back established a kind of a black-on-black apartheid system that was one of the worst the world's ever seen. It's almost like South Africa's. The true Whig Party, which was these Americo-Liberians, the ones who were former slaves, reestablished antebellum sort of master-servant relationships, and they'd build these houses just like in the American South, which you can still see today in Liberia, with fireplaces. I mean, who needs a fireplace in the tropics? And they would sit on their wraparound porches and watch the 99% indigenous Africans work their plantations. And interestingly enough, actually, Liberia was brought to charges on slavery in the 1920s by the League of Nations, and it toppled their president and vice president. They were actually accused internationally of slavery. So in a sense, when I arrived there, I mean, you just fall right into the top of that pyramid. You know, you're at the top of the hierarchy. You're now part of that master class. And everyone kind of looks at you in that way.
We're all familiar with the term, you know, third world countries, but you write about the fourth world. What do you mean?
That's right. Yeah, the fourth worlds. That's a term that I coined for the countries that are not just poor, but the ones that are completely unstable, environmentally devastated. You know, the ones where Pandora's box has been opened and just can't be closed. I'm talking about the frontiers of anarchy. Countries like Myanmar, like Sierra Leone, Liberia, Sudan, maybe even now Iraq.
But here you've got a country that's been cursed by, you know, murderous, maniacal dictators, and yet blessed by natural resources, in particular, this vast rainforest.
Yes, Liberia is a just absolute Garden of Eden. It's got one of the largest percentages of rainforests, virgin rainforests, anywhere in the world. I would watch you know, pygmy hippos tobogganing into rivers, just gorgeous rainforest rising up into the canopy, and howler monkeys and all kinds of wildlife. It's just incredible.
And the UN has a ban on the export of timber from the rainforest.
Yeah, that's right. They were calling it conflict timber because when I was there during Charles Taylor's regime, he was actually trading timber for weapons and supplying the RUF in Sierra Leone. And of course, they were the famous people who chopped off, you know, people's limbs to terrorize them. So ironically, not only was the country being just deforested at an incredibly fast rate, but it was also contributing to destabilizing the region.
There is a success story, however, in your book, and you talk about Chief Wa, a guy who experiments with fish.
Yeah, he was a wonderful chief down by Tsapo National Park, where I worked, Liberia's only national park, and he was able to transform secondary bush into a veritable paradise of multi-story agriculture and fish farming, you know, contouring, different ways of preserving the land while saving the rainforest that were right around his village. And, you know, what he told me, he said, I don't need to go into the bush and I don't need to slash and burn anymore because I'm producing everything right here.
Why was he successful?
That's a really good question. He was one of the so-called master farmers that I work with. He wasn't very educated, but like a lot of Liberians, he was innovative and optimistic, and he was able to adopt these technologies. I think part of the reason also was that we came up with a song. Everything in Liberia in the rural villages is tied to singing and playing music and so on. And I think what really had it take was the fact that we developed a song for swamp rice and for working in aquaculture. And, you know, once they had a song, everyone went out in the swamp fields and started harvesting rice and so on. It's kind of a beautiful thing to see.
What do we need to do to preserve the rainforest in Liberia?
All the first world governments in, as far as I know, have prioritized saving, you know, the last great rainforest on Earth, not just the conservation groups. So Liberia is maybe almost half pristine rainforest. So what I would suggest is that we set that aside as a UN biosphere reserve. Liberia needs stability and, you know, we need these rainforests. So let's make a trade. Let's do a quid pro quo and commit to Liberia for 20 years. And I'm talking about bringing piped water to a couple of cities, bringing some electricity to the country, and committing to education, because I think education is important for breaking the cycles of violence that have existed there. And in return, we receive the kind of benefits that rainforests give us. So I think it would be a fantastic move for President Bush to go for what I would call a peace for nature swap. You know, we help bring peace to Liberia, and they hand over a good portion of their country to humanity.
Mr. Powers, you're still an idealist.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. I think that I am still an idealist.
Mr. Powers, thank you very much. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, it was really great talking with you. Thank you.
William Powers is author of Blue Clay People, Seasons on Africa's Fragile Edge.